Every day of the year has some sort of special designation. There's not a day of the year that doesn't have bragging rights for this cause, that organization, or some historical commemoration. The United Nations declares some of them, like June 15th, which marks World Elder Abuse Awareness Day each year, or March 20th, which is the United Nations International Day of Happiness. Pi Day is a fairly recent holiday, inaugurated in 1988 by physicist Larry Shaw of the Exploratorium, that's a children's museum in San Francisco. As every math student knows, pi is the name of the mathematical constant 3.14, and on and on and on, symbolized by the Greek letter pi. Pi Day is observed, of course, on March 14th, that is the date 314. How many of you observed National Grilled Cheese Sandwich Day back on April 12th? Anyone? No? One of my favorite days is September 19th, which is International Talk Like a Pirate Day. Arr, that's right. Well, this past Friday, April 22nd, marked another international designation, appropriately called Earth Day. Earth Day, considered the birth of the modern environmental movement, is not quite 50 years old. How did it come about? Well, here's how Los Angeles Times writer Miles Corwin recently reflected back on that time. He wrote, "To this day, from a large crack in the surface on the bottom of the Santa Barbara Channel, about 5 miles off the California coastline, to this day, a few barrels of oil bubble to the surface each day. The Slick and the nearby Unocal Corporation drilling platform Alpha are the last visible vestiges of the worst oil spill in the nation's history up until then. On January 28, 1969, a blowout erupted underneath the platform, and before it was plugged, more than 3 million gallons of crude oil spewed from drilling-induced cracks in the channel floor. 3 million gallons. Let me note that as massive as this spill was, for comparison, the size of the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico in 2010 was more than 40 times greater than this. But back to Santa Barbara. For weeks, national attention was focused on the Santa Barbara spill's disturbing, dramatic images. Oil-soaked birds, unable to fly, slowly dying on the sand. Waves so thick with crude oil that they broke on shore, imagine this, with an eerie silence. Hundreds of miles of ocean covered with an oily black sheen. 30 miles of sandy beaches coated with thick sludge. But the spill's impact went far beyond the fouled beaches. The disaster is considered to be a major factor in the birth of the modern-day environmental movement. You see, moved by the scope of the ecological damage caused by the Santa Barbara spill, a United States senator from Wisconsin felt compelled to raise our nation's awareness that humankind was impacting the natural environment in many ways that were negative and in some ways that were irreversible. And from that, Earth Day was born. And like many of you, I'm old enough to remember the first time Earth Day was observed, April 22nd, 1970. An historian recalls that at that time, Americans were slurping leaded gas through massive V8-powered sedans. Industry belched out smoke and sludge with little fear of legal consequences or bad press. Air pollution was commonly accepted as the smell of prosperity. Environment was a word that appeared more often in spelling bees than on the evening news. Now, of course, Cleveland had a hand in the beginning of Earth Day 2. Not 6 months after the Santa Barbara spill, our own Cuyahoga River caught fire on June 20th, 1969. An oil slick on our heavily polluted river was ignited, probably by the sparks of a passing train. But actually, that didn't make much news until about a month later when Time magazine published a photo of the Cuyahoga River on fire. But here's a little known fact. The photo that Time published was of the Cuyahoga River, but from a much more serious fire in November 1952. No picture of the 69 fire is known to exist, according to the Cleveland Historical Society. And like most rivers in the industrialized world, the Cuyahoga had caught fire numerous times. It's as though we misread God's instruction to Adam as presented in Genesis. While God charged the man to have dominion, authority over the natural world, the industrialized world has acted as though we were told to dominate, to force our will upon nature. Now, how did it come about, this antagonistic relationship between humankind and the natural world? Well, it happened as humankind slowly became increasingly separated from nature. Take a look at the photo on the front cover of the bulletin. I took that last year as I was going out one morning to get my newspaper and was greeted by someone who was not the paper boy. And this just reminds us that to a deer or to any other animal, sidewalks and driveways and houses and cars don't make any difference. They're looking for food and water and a place to procreate. A British environmentalist points out that modern urban dwellers are largely cocooned from the environment. We live in solid, centrally heated houses supplied by well-organized utility companies. We depend on machines for transport, food, and clothing production. We never feel threatened by any other kinds of life except perhaps bacteria and viruses. He points out that whereas in ancient times people lived in daily contact with the natural world, Westerners today only encounter it through TV or tourism or vestigial forms such as having a pet or doing some gardening. But these are mere hobbies. They are optional extras, not vital activities for human survival as they once were for everyone. Now, don't get me wrong. I am very thankful for the conveniences and comforts that I enjoy. I appreciate an air-conditioned bedroom on a sweltering night. I appreciate the magic of a car seat heater on a frosty morning. I'm thankful that I don't have to walk to the river every morning to fetch the water I'll be using that day, the way millions of people around the world still have to do. I enjoy the fact that I can sleep securely at night without threat to property or person by wild animals invading my campsite the possible exception being Parker the dog. Our lives are safer and more comfortable because of the way that we've been able to shape and control the natural world for our benefit. That safety and comfort comes at a cost. The cost of urbanization and suburbanization has been the destruction of natural habitats, the pollution of habitats that haven't been destroyed, and the displacement or suppression of various plants and animals. Our separation and isolation, our cocooning, as that British writer called it, our separation and isolation from the natural world does come at a cost. In his Sermon on the Mount, Jesus tried to assuage people's worries, worries about providing for their daily needs. Because in the ancient world, providing for daily needs, that was full-time work. Of course, you worked to draw and carry your water. Of course, you farmed or fished or trapped or hunted for food. There was no clothing store down the street. You had to grow the plants and harvest the fibers for spinning into yarn that then you would weave into cloth from which you would make your clothing. And if you didn't do all that, you'd be equally hard at work at something else so you could trade or barter for the clothing you needed. In those rustic times, you bet that people worried about their daily needs, what they'd eat or drink or wear. When Jesus encouraged them to place their trust in God, who already knows what we need, Jesus illustrated what he meant by citing examples from the world of nature. God feeds the birds who don't plant or harvest. God graces the wild lilies of the field with sustenance that does not come from the gardener's hand, but from God's. And as much as we get what Jesus was trying to say, those folks on that hillside understood even more because birds and wildflowers were part of everyday life. They were not precious rarities reserved for zoo aviaries and botanical gardens. In my Spring Awakenings sermon series from Easter to Pentecost, we're being invited to explore how our faith calls us to awaken to new possibilities. In Romans 13, the Apostle Paul urged us to adopt a new urgency in living into the consequences of our faith. He wrote, "The hour has already come for you to wake up from your slumber. Because our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed." And in light of the recent Earth Day observance, I wondered how our faith might call us to wake up from our slumber about our responsibility as caretakers, stewards of the natural creation, the creation of God. And so here's how today's message came about. A Bible verse came to mind. It wasn't the whole verse, just a fragment of the passage I referred to earlier. The good old King James translation of the Bible quotes Jesus as saying, "Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. And yet I say unto you, even King Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these." Consider the lilies of the field. That was it. Consider. That's a first step. How might we awaken to the possibility of becoming more responsible in our engagement with the natural world? The first thing we can do is consider. Consider. A dictionary will tell you that the word consider has a Latin origin meaning looking at closely or observing. If we consider, we are thinking about something in order to understand it or to make a decision about it. Considering is the first step in understanding and appreciating and maybe even resolving to change. Our office administrator, Crystal Duffield, saw something. She called me as it was happening. She saw something last week that caused her to wish that an unknown woman had given some effort to considering the environment. Crystal's desk faces the windows which face the western driveway over here. And after some mother had dropped off her child at our preschool, the mom stopped her car by the music wing over here. She got out, she pulled out her floor mat, dumped its trash on the ground, and brushed the debris into our parking lot, put it back in, got back in, and drove off. The limits of her environmental awareness ended at the handle of her car door. It didn't include the grounds of our church. If only she had considered possible impacts of her action. I heard this week that our church's Priscilla Circle is working on a plan. I haven't figured it out fully yet, but they're working on a plan to encourage each of us to consider something. To consider water. For nearly a year, the circle has been engaged with the Presbyterian Women National Bible Study, which this year is focused on the theme of water. And the members of Priscilla's circle have become more conscious of the preciousness of fresh water, a preciousness that is not easy for us to appreciate since we live next to one of the planet's largest sources of fresh water. But at some point, later this year, the Priscilla Circle hopes to be able to spur us to consider water, to think about it so we can better understand its preciousness and we can make decisions about what each of us personally might do to be more responsible in our use of water. And that's the power of considering. We begin by becoming more mindful of something. The tested and faithful Old Testament figure, Job, appreciated how all the parts of the natural creation spoke praise for God, their creator. Job told his friend Zophar in Job chapter 12. Job said to Zophar, "But ask the animals, and they will teach you. The birds of the air, they will tell you. Ask the plants of the earth, and they will teach you. And the fish of the sea will declare to you. Who among all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done all this? In his hand is the life of every living thing and the breath of every human being." In awakening to consider nature, we accept our responsibility as caretakers, selected and empowered by God. As we notice and appreciate the rich, the varied, the interdependent dimensions of this world in which our lives unfold, then we are better able to respect and protect, to responsibly preserve and responsibly use the gift of God's natural creation. Amen. Let it be so.